the show that connects businesses in Kent to do business. Tweet us live at Kent_biz.
How weird was that, Brian?
What have you done, Martin?
We didn't even have to play the theme tune to Kent Biz Connect because it's actually playing last week's show again.
Ah,
so
okay.
It was there already, so I didn't even have to press my techno wizardry segue button, whatever it's called.
Which is probably for the best.
But. Yeah, absolutely. So we're live and we're on air, and welcome everybody, and thank you for tuning in to this week's Kent Biz Connect radio show, the show that connects businesses in Kent to do business. With
me, Brian Wakefield.
And myself, Martin White, and we've got two fabulous guests in the studio today as well. Brian.
We certainly have. We have to my left, looking gorgeous and bright and very yellow, is the wonderful
Amanda O'Reilly.
Welcome.
Hi, Amanda. Welcome.
Lovely to
and,
have you.
And looking even more gorgeous to her left, on the red mic, is the wonderful
Richard Dickerty.
From
Secure Payment Solutions.
Welcome, Richard.
Thank you very much.
Lovely to have you both in the studio. We're on for an hour and a half today, so we've got plenty of time to talk to you guys shortly. We're going to be running through some news, some events that are happening that people might like to get involved with. If you'd like to tweet us and tell us what your business is up to at the moment, please feel free to do so. Brian, what's our Twitter handle?
Kent_biz.
Nice and simple. Kent_biz. Our website, obviously, is kentbizconnect.co.uk. You can also listen to us live through that if you're actually tuned into Channel Radio, Channel 2. But I think we'll get straight into it, Brian. Should we kick off?
Yeah, I think those people might also just like to say hi and hello and let us know that they're out there, or if they want to say wonderful things about our two lovely guests, Amanda and Richard. So
yes.
Feel free to do that as well, and all the messaging channels that are available.
Brilliant. What's going on this week? It's a busy week, isn't it, in the Kent business community again?
It's a really, really busy week. It's strange, really. It's the first week, it seems like, in forever that it's been a five-day week. So we've got this multitude of four-day weeks, haven't we? So a couple of things. Last week, Events and Expo at Detling on Wednesday was interesting. And this week is the real big one, though.
Is it?
The real, real big one. Wednesday the 15th is Business Vision Live.
Oh, yes, of course it is.
So, good job I reminded you of that, because you're exhibiting,
well,
aren't you?
Well, that's right. I'd have forgotten all about it if you hadn't.
He's joking, listeners, honestly. He wouldn't have. It's etched on his forehead as we speak. But
it used to be Kent Vision Live, didn't it? Why do you think they've kind of branded it slightly differently this year?
Well, my view on it is that it's such a big event that probably people from outside of Kent come, and you just don't have to be in Kent to be involved, really. There's a lot going on. There's in excess of 3,000 visitors across the day, and probably 250 to 300 exhibitors. And there's all manner of seminars and workshops and talks going on. It's a massive networking opportunity, really. So
what are you looking at him for in particular, and Amanda and Richard as well? Because, I mean, I know you're going, definitely. What are you guys kind of looking out for on the day? Is there some stuff you want to learn about, or you just want to kind of network with people, or what's the kind of...
I think a mixture of all of those, really. I haven't looked in detail at the programme of speakers and stuff like that yet, but it's just a huge... Often at these kind of things, I plan where I'm going to be at certain times and who I'm going to go and see. Mm. That just goes out of the window almost as soon as you get there, because there are just so many people and you bump into people. And, I mean, what about you, Richard? Are you planning to have a little wander down to the Detling show ground on Wednesday?
I think it's quite likely, but I'm also looking at my diary and realising that actually I've booked in a seminar on Wednesday morning.
Okay, where's that?
That's at Churchill Square in Kings Hill.
It's
Karen's, yes. That's right, yeah.
Karen Cresswell.
Yeah, yes.
Because I was really impressed with her presentation at BNN a couple of weeks ago. BBN even. BBN. BBN.
Got there in the M, Richard. Yeah, that's quite all right.
BNN. Sounds like CNN with a B.
Yeah. Yeah, I did mention that to Karen. I think she pointed out that that finishes at 11 or...
Yeah, something like that.
So it does, doesn't it? So you can probably still be at the showground by 11:30 or something like that.
So I probably will.
Yeah. And Amanda?
Yeah, similar. I haven't been before, so it will be interesting to see how big it is and what's there, really.
Yeah.
So that would be fun.
Yeah, and it's always an interesting one because they run a big one at XL on the Wednesday and Thursday as well. And I know a lot of businesses actually try and do both.
The business show,
So for a lot of people, it is a very, very busy week because they do try and combine the two. But what are you looking out for, Amanda?
Again, I think it's networking and just to see what the seminars are and maybe find something that's interesting and maybe follow Brian round occasionally.
Oh, yes. Okay. It's often a good ploy. Yeah. Yes. Who we'll meet, we don't know, but that's half the fun, isn't it? But
well, I think the keynote this year, or one of them certainly, is Simon Jacks, isn't it? He's the business editor for the BBC.
Yeah, so, I saw that.
That'll be interesting because I think they're allowed to kind of basically say what they want to say when they go to things like this. So it'll be interesting to get the kind of get his view of the world rather than the BBC's view of the world, I think. Because we all know how the BBC like to report on
because
things.
Because he'll think we're not recording it and sending it back to the BBC.
Exactly.
As if we would.
But it'll be a good opportunity to kind of put him on the spot about Brexit, I think, and stuff like that, because he will take questions. So, and, of course, it's ably supported and sponsored by the FSB.
Right, yeah.
Federation of Small Businesses. So they'll be there. And, in fact, Alison Palmer from the FSB is going to be on this show next week.
She is next show, isn't she? Yeah, yeah.
I mean... So there might be some confused people out there because we are a
me being one of them.
Show. but we're on again next week. And why is that, Brian? Why are we doing back-to-back shows in May?
Well, we touched on it just now, actually. It is because of the plethora of bank holidays. So we should have been on the 27th of May, 2 weeks today. And it's another bank holiday.
It's an early one, isn't it?
So, yeah, it'll interfere with your golf and everything else. So, I, of course, was quite happy to let the show go on and still broadcast. But
the show must go on.
Of course. But you would not be dragged off the golf course on a bank holiday. Definitely so not. We've moved it. So we've actually, we're here again next week. Mm-hmm. And then we've got a 3-week gap until the 13th of June or 10th of June or whenever that is.
Brilliant.
So, so Business Vision Live this Wednesday, pretty much biggest single event in Kent in the whole year.
Yes.
So be there or be nowhere, really.
Exactly. Yeah. Good. All right. Well, moving on from that, I know there's some news that you've picked up on locally that you wanted to kind of share with us. So what's going on out there?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because always try and see what catches our eye in Kent at the time of broadcasting. And last time round, we spoke quite a lot about the Debenhams closing down in Kent that was going to really be affecting sort of Herne Bay and Folkestone and pretty much everywhere. But this time I'm pleased to say is exactly the opposite. So for those of us that know the Ashford Designer Outlet, as you East Kentians call it down here, Martin, not only have they just opened a Yo Sushi place, which I think is all the rage, this cold raw Japanese fish type stuff.
I like it.
Yeah, apparently people like it. Yeah. Really? Okay, I'm clearly in the minority then. But apart from that, it's actually all part of a £90 million expansion that's happening there right now, and it's going to be completed. Did you?
It looks very impressive.
Drive past it slowly or very quickly?
I was definitely within the speed limit.
I think what Brian's getting at is were you stuck in a traffic jam?
The traffic was free flowing at the time.
Was it?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, because it's interesting because there's all going to be completed by this autumn, and there's 50 brand new premium and luxury brands going to be added there. So, which is good for Ashford wide, really, all of Kent. I know people travel from all over Kent to go there. It's all completed by the autumn. There's 725 new parking spaces. However, and there always is one, there's a traffic calming program going on. Mm. Which basically means, so there's a bit of local traffic news for people, Newton Road at the junction of Romney Marsh Road is closed as part of that until the 19th of July. So it's actually going to cause bedlam up until then. But hey-ho, there's no gain without pain, is there? So it's all to make this this really good thing. So
we had Andrew Osborne from Ashford Borough Council at our
after six
networking at the Ashford International last month.
Did he speak about this?
He did. He spoke about the MacArthur Glen expansion there. He spoke about Curious Brew, have obviously just opened their brewery, I think, on Friday, which is part of the Chapel Down group. Yeah. Is it Netflix, I think, are coming into the area. They've bought up a whole kind of previous brownfield unused site where they're going to be making a lot of new programs, a lot of programming that's going to be made there.
That'd be interesting.
We've got the whole new motorway junction going in as well. There's a massive housing
junction
estate.
Junction 10A. Always got to have an A.
So Ashford is really sort of buzzing at the moment.
It's, so it would appear that face-to-face retail is not dead then?
Well, and that's exactly right. And you've beat me to that very valid point, Mr. Dickerty.
Sorry to steal your thunder there, Brian.
Exactly. No, not at all. Not at all. I'm pleased you did, because I was going to ask you your views on it. And that was the subject last time. And Brian Downton said exactly that, didn't he? He said that basically as one door closes and another one shuts, as I said it, but another one opens.
Well, these are destination kind of shopping experiences, aren't they, as opposed to an individual store.
Or as opposed to the traditional high street. And I think that's what's changing.
I think that's exactly right, because it gives people an opportunity that if you get a big department store or whatever closed down, it does give opportunities to lots of smaller retailers to come in. But there's a different feel with this place, isn't there? So, yes, for that kind of destination designer type shopping,
I wonder if there's
good.
A supermarket going in there, because what they tend to do is, well, I mean, I live near Westwood Cross down in Broadstairs, and there's a massive Sainsbury's that's a hypermarket rather than a supermarket that's opened up there.
But if this is high level and premium brands, it will only be Waitrose, surely.
Or Marks and Spencer's, maybe.
Yes.
Don't know about M&S.
They're going
the Debenhams route, aren't they, at the moment? But, I wonder if there will be, because that seems to be what people want. You know, they want to be able to go to one place, do their weekly shop, do their clothes shopping, maybe go and see a film, you know, just have a whole day.
I think experience is the word that they talk about, isn't it?
With lots of free parking, that's easy, because how much time do you waste trying to find somewhere to park and stuff like that? Mm. So, Amanda, you'll be taking a special trip down there, I understand, to sample some sushi and some designer clothes.
As a stylist.
Mm. Yes.
Although I don't take people personal shopping, I still think it's very important to go and have a look and try on things. And I think that's really important, why the high street shop or an experience shopping is that you can go and try things on and done. It's not wait for it to come. Try it on, then send it back.
Because a lot of these online retailers now are actually saying they're going to start penalising people if they continually order stuff and never buy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's not try before you buy with a lot of people, it's try and never buy. And I think it's costing these online retailers an awful lot of money.
If it's their fault, assumably. I mean, if they send the wrong size or the wrong item.
Sure.
Not that.
But most people are just kind of window shopping, aren't they?
Or they will order several different sizes just to try and, you know, get the right one. Although that normally ends up in a purchase. But it must be very frustrating, I would imagine, as a retailer to be sending out three or four items and
knowing you're going to get it.
Knowing exactly that only one of them, of course, is actually only going to be bought.
Yeah, yeah.
I heard something interesting as well on the radio on the way over about, we digress slightly, but it was Amazon talking about how they're going to help people set up delivery businesses on the back of their business now. So at the moment, I guess they use local courier companies to an extent, but what they actually want to do is now start investing in individual people who want to set up their own delivery business on the back of the Amazon business. And by that, I mean they're going to actually put some seed money up front to help you do that. And whether that's to buy a vehicle or marketing or, you know, whatever it is that you need to do to get your business off the ground. So that's quite interesting, isn't it? So, you know, everybody says, you know, oh crikey, you know, online it's kind of killing jobs and everything else. But of course it opens up a whole new marketplace for new people that want to do that as a business. So
and they're more invested in it because it's their business rather than just being employed by Amazon.
Exactly.
And not necessarily delivering the parcels where they perhaps should be.
I had an Amazon delivery myself at the weekend. I had some nice Hawaiian Leis, they're called. L-E-I, Lei.
Yes, the ones that go around your neck.
Garlands, flower garlands. So very impressed I was with their service as well. Anyway, we need to move on.
I won't ask you why you've ordered those, Martin. I do know, but I'm not going to embarrass you on air.
Don't. Let's tell everybody out there what else is going on this week. So we've done Business Vision Live. We've done MacArthur Glen, the Outlet Centre. Let's talk about Thursday, the day after Business Vision Live. Where are you going to be, Brian?
Yes, of course. I nearly forgot that. I shall, of course, be hosting and running BBN Dartford on the 16th. So we've got three meetings this month, the way the calendar falls.
Busy, isn't it?
So it is. It is. It has gone that way. Mm. So, Dartford FC for BBN Dartford on Thursday morning.
Good. So that's 7 o'clock, Dartford Football Club. If anybody is thinking about coming, you may be able to squeeze them in last minute. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, it's touch and go. It's full at the moment. I'm not expecting we're past the sort of cancellation. I might be able to squeeze one person in, literally just one. Unless somebody gets kind of ill the day before or something like that, really. But technically and basically it is full, as are the next few there. But
if somebody sends you a nice groveling tweet at Brian's BN, he might be able to squeeze you in. So, there you go. But if you're at the other end of the county, we're just going to do a quick run through of all our events now. If you're at the other end of the county, down on the marsh next week, next Thursday, Terry Botfield would love to see you. So he's got his monthly Marsh Breakfast Networking from 7:30 in the morning, and that is at the award-winning Ship Inn in Dymchurch, which I think was I think they were the winners of Come Dine With Me or something, or one of these kind of daytime reality TV programs on Channel 4. So networking on the marsh. So if you're maybe East Sussex or you're down on the marsh somewhere or in kind of rural West Kent, then I would recommend you get yourselves along to that. Terry Botfield is your man. There is an Eventbrite page. There's also a Marsh Networking website, which is marshnetwork.co.uk. Brian.
Great. Okay. Yeah. Following week, Wednesday 29th, a good friend of BBM Maidstone, Peter Sell from the FSB, is FSB Connect. He'll be hosting an event at Metrobank, which is, I think they're probably quarterly, actually, but it's Metrobank Maidstone. They run from 6 till 7:30. And free to attend. You don't need to book. Just come along, listen to the speaker, and meet some new people. Yeah. Wednesday, 29th of May.
Good. Now, if you're not at Business Vision Live on Wednesday, and I can't imagine why you wouldn't be, but I know there will be people that aren't necessarily going all day. But if you are a business that is perhaps recently registered for VAT, and you're required to go through the Making Tax Digital process in your business, Richard, I don't know where you are on MTD. Are you all kind of?
I did it last week, actually. I'm not required to be VAT registered. Right. I don't turn over enough, but I did choose
voluntarily.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So you've had to go through the process then, basically.
Yeah, it was pretty simple.
Yeah.
It was pretty straightforward. I think I had to, crikey, it's basically changing the nature of your gateway ID, I think, is the way I understood it.
Right.
Okay. But you just had to go online, enter in certain information, and that was it. It was done. Okay. And then it just immediately integrated with Xero, which is what I used to do my accounting and bookkeeping, and it was pretty straightforward.
So you mentioned Xero there. That's very interesting as well. So if your tax year is if your business financial year is effectively the tax year, so it sort of runs from April basically. Your first VAT return will be due in, I think it's the beginning of August, under the new Making Tax Digital rules, if you haven't already been doing it digitally. And in order to do that, you'll need to get clued up, clearly. And Bell's accountants, the brilliant Joanne Bell in Chislehurst, are running a Making Tax Digital Xero training workshop on Wednesday the 15th of May, so this Wednesday. So I'm sure there's still time for you to book on if you want to. It's 11 till 1pm and it's at their offices in Chislehurst. And again, all of this information is on the community page of Supply My Business. I'm sure they'd be delighted to see you and help you out with your MTD Xero training.
Sounds exciting. Mm. Another BBM friend, Simon Morgan from the HR department, who's a member up in our Dartford group, is hosting another FSB Connect event at Base Point Dartford, and that's on Thursday 23rd of May at 6pm. And guest speakers are Mark Manley and Sam Dunn, talking about well-being.
Mm, fantastic. Well, that will be good. I mean, the FSB are very, very active and very sort of proactive, I would suggest, on a networking level in Kent. If you haven't been to any of their events before, they are generally, unless it's a breakfast thing, they are generally free to attend. They've also got a breakfast this Thursday at Tunbridge, and it's at the old fire station in Tunbridge, which I think is Dame Kelly Holmes's cafe, actually. I think
that's
she owns
definitely her patch.
She owns the old fire station. Very successful business. So again, the FSB and Dame Kelly, I'm sure she's often there, actually, would love to see you. It's this Thursday, the 16th of May. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. There is an Eventbrite booking link, but again, it's all on the community page of Supply My Business.
Mm, excellent. And you being a native, Martin, there's actually something going on in Broadstairs.
There is.
Has that ever happened before?
Well, this is the second time it's happened.
Is it really?
Yeah, so
something happened in Broadstairs.
Only once
twice.
Before.
Well, it's going to happen again. It's Monday the 20th of May, 9 to 10:30.
That's next Monday, isn't it?
Is it really? Mm. Yes, it is. It would be,
week
wouldn't
today.
It? Yeah. The Caffeine Coffee Shop in Albion Street.
Yeah.
You'll know it well, won't you?
Oh. Yeah. And they really do look after you there. They put on a scrumptious continental buffet breakfast. I think it's £10 if you're an FSB member, £15 if you're not. By that I mean fresh bread rolls with that lovely sort of continental sliced cheese and fresh ham and I love that kind of breakfast.
Yeah, should we go, guys? What do you reckon? Should we go for the bread,
just for
eat all the bread and then go?
Well, you go for me because I'm not intending to go to that
aren't
one
you?
Unfortunately, well no, I'm gonna I think I might be in need of a lie-in on
so
Monday
the bottom
morning.
Of your road, why
it is
can
it
you
is.
Not go
well because well for obvious reasons that we're not going to talk about.
No, we're not, are we?
But we will be here at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Brian.
Will we?
Even if we're not at Caffeine Coffee Shop in Broadstairs at 9 o'clock in the morning.
That would make a full day, wouldn't it? So what about Richard and Amanda? Have you got anything coming up that we might have missed over the next couple of weeks? You going doing anything interesting or
well,
not?
Yeah, I have a Ladies Who Latte at West Malling, which I'm the leader of. So,
how are you?
Yes.
Fabulous.
That's tomorrow, actually.
We're not allowed to come to that, are we?
You're not allowed to come to that, no.
Tell us about that. Tell us more about Ladies Who Latte, because obviously we don't go. But
no, that's pretty obvious.
So, but
don't start.
Tell our lady listeners what it's all about and the kind of the concept.
The concept is women supporting women.
Right.
So smaller businesses, possibly women that have just started their business and looking for support and network and advice. Mm-hmm. And the group that I lead is a small group, although there are 300 members. We average about 15 every month
right.
that come to the meeting, which is a nice number. Mm. It's and everybody gets to know everybody. We have new members coming along, and we have the usual, the way the networking runs, you have a minute pitch. Sometimes we do longer than that, because that way I feel that you get to know each other and your business a lot easier than you would with just a 45-second pitch.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
So it's quite informal.
Very informal.
As she gives me evils yeah. across the dance floor there.
Yeah, we don't time our ladies most of the time.
Oh, good Lord. People? You could be there for
no,
days.
It's free.
It's just a free to attend event.
Yeah, you'd normally just buy a coffee.
Right. And where do you have this?
Mine is at West Morling Golf Club.
Oh, Westmorling Golf Club. Yeah. Right, yeah.
So plenty of parking mm-hmm. and lots of space.
Oh, fantastic. So yeah. that's tomorrow morning?
That's tomorrow morning.
Oh, so
at
no need to book.
10 a.m.
People can
Turn
just
up.
Come along.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, fantastic. So there you go.
Bring a friend,
Brilliant.
A lady.
What a good idea. So meet Amanda
friend.
Tomorrow, 10 o'clock, yeah. Westmorling Golf Club.
Yeah, come so along.
If we want to be involved, we just need to hang around outside, do we, until it's finished. And then, what about you, Richard? Even you're not invited?
No, apparently not. I don't think so. But, yeah, not a big fan of latte, so...
you don't have to have a coffee. You can. It's more for the support and collaboration.
That sounds like
and
a great thing, yeah.
Women do find it difficult sometimes if they're just starting a business. Mm. Especially if it's an mainly male environment, which networking
quite
has
often
been,
is, yeah.
although BBN isn't, which is good. There's a mix between with yours.
You felt very much so.
I really like. But for women that haven't had experience networking, it's a good place to start.
Can be a bit off-putting, I guess. Yeah. You need to be amongst friends, don't you,
Absolutely.
And sort of build your confidence.
Yeah.
So. And on that note, what we're going to do now is we're going to play some tunage.
Are we?
And that's going to lead us into our first guest.
Is it? Okay.
And we want people to see if they can spot the obvious link here. So here we go.
After all you put me through, you think I despise you. But in the end, I wanna thank you, 'cause you made me that much stronger.
I couldn't trust, caught your bluff, taught me some cause I've had enough.
So, Brian, I believe there is a link there somewhere with our first guest today.
That's what you're hoping, isn't it?
Indeed,
I am.
Do
you know what that was? No, you don't. I'll tell you. That was Fighter by Christina Aguilera, going all the way back to 2002.
And the link is?
Well, there's a link because she's talking about her and ladies having to fight, basically. And so to do that, you know, come out with your confidence, stand in your own power, that kind of thing. So there is a link to the lovely Amanda O'Reilly.
Welcome Hello. To the show again, Amanda.
Hello.
Hello. Lovely to have you with us.
Yes, lovely to be here. Actually.
Fantastic. Good. So let's get straight into it.
Okay.
What exactly do you do? Because you're a stylist, you're a confidence coach. Tell us in your own words what that actually entails.
Well, to keep it really simple, I help you look good on the outside and help you feel better on the inside.
Right.
It is that simple.
Mm-hmm.
I think we, not just women, men as well, lack confidence in style and how they're perceived. And so I help people understand their own image and feel confident to stand in their own authentic selves and stand in their power.
Brian doesn't lack confidence. He just lacks style, I think.
So. You can't have it all. Yeah, we're going to talk about image and style.
Does
and
wear colour.
Yes.
Thank you, Amanda.
He's rather partial to football shirts, isn't he? Yeah, which are very colourful.
Irrelevant. It's a colour, isn't
yeah,
it, Amanda?
No, if it's, it, you know, he is confident with his colour choice, and that's important too. And wearing the right colour can give people can see you rather than the colour. Where you wear the wrong colour, you get lost in your, you know, you just become, well, a lot of women tend to sort of wear beige sometimes and they've got blonde hair. Beige clothes.
Oh, it all kind of blends in.
Whereas if you know what colours are right for you, you can stand out. And in business, as a small business owner, we need to stand out, men and women.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're showing your personality through style or and colour, that makes you memorable. But it's not just about how you look. It's about how you speak. It's about how you stand. It's your handshake. There's lots to it. It's
eye
about
contact.
How you present. It's about eye contact. It's all of that. And I help with that too. So I help with people who might not want be a bit insecure about standing up and pitching at a networking event.
Because that is, I mean, if I think back to when I first started going networking, when I was still in my late 30s, I think.
You're not going to say you were shy in retiring.
Well, I mean, I have to say, I still struggle with it now. You know, when you're with a group of people that you've perhaps never met before, it can be quite
Absolutely.
A sort of daunting prospect, can't it, to stand up and tell people who you are and what you do.
Yeah, in a 45-second pitch, you do have to be very succinct, know what you're saying, and say it clearly. And a lot of people don't really do that. They'll say, my name, and you don't actually understand what they're saying.
Mm.
So it's about pitch and clarity and rhythm as well. Mm-hmm. There's
so
lots more to
it. What we wear day to day is a reflection of how we feel inside about ourselves, perhaps. It's the sort of everything that's going on inside here, which you don't know, but it comes out in what I'm wearing. That's for you, that's an indicator of how somebody is feeling on a kind of confidence level, for example. Beige, you mentioned, ladies that wear beige, men that wear black. I mean, I don't know, there's some stereotypes, I guess, there's lots.
Yeah, well, it is, you know, if you're wearing a bright colour, automatically you feel brighter.
Mm.
If you're wearing black, which a lot of people do, which there's nothing wrong with, by the way, you can wear black, and if you are wearing black and you're not feeling brilliant, it will make you feel a little less sparkly, say, for the want of a better way of looking. But also, it's how you're seen. So it's not, it's both. It's understanding what you see in your mirror. And if you're happy with that, your body confidence goes up and people then relate to you.
Right. So the fact that you're wearing a black T-shirt like I am today,
your golf shirt,
doesn't necessarily mean that I'm feeling bad about myself.
Absolutely, of course not. Mm. No, definitely not. Mm. But you can use colour. I mean, there is a lot of colour psychology about the different colours, but it's not
really about that. It's about body confidence. It's about confident with yourself. And it's about being aware. Self-awareness is a really important thing. And then this week, it's Mental Awareness Week.
Is it? Right.
Mm-hmm. And mental health. So it's very important that you're aware of your mental health and that you can express it in any way that you choose to and that you're authentic in how your style is. Because a lot of people think they have to dress in a certain way because other people, they don't want to be judged in a certain way. But if you're confident with your choices and you know what suits you and you have a certain style, then you're going to relate to people and people are going to relate to you in a much more positive way than if you're standing in a corner not really talking to anybody.
So, I mean, we mentioned earlier that you run a very popular Ladies Who Latte group in, in Westmorland. You've got a meeting tomorrow. If you have a new person coming to the group for the first time and they're obviously a little bit lacking in confidence because they haven't been before, but perhaps they're going into business for themselves for the first time, they need to get out there. How do you work with somebody like that? What's the starting point for kind of for working with somebody on that level? How do you approach that? What's the kind of the process that you go through? Okay.
Well, I would start with a questionnaire, and then it's talking, it's coaching. If it's confidence, it's coaching. So it's asking questions and giving practical help as well.
So what would your questionnaire, what kind of things are you trying to kind of find out about that individual in the first instance?
How they see themselves is very important. That would be the first thing that I would want to know, because then I would know how I work is very intuitive and very holistic. Mm-hmm. So it's very important to be able to connect and give that person that I'm working with a safe space to express themselves, feel non-judged, because that's really important. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, we do live in a world that is very judgmental, and I don't like that. And I think that if people that work with me know that I create a safe space and that they're able to explore their ideas of themselves and how they want to be seen in the world and standing in their own power. And there's a lot with the Me Too movements and those sort of where women haven't felt that they've been able to stand in their own power, be their authentic self. And I suppose I aim to help people do that.
That's really interesting, because if I, you know, as a bloke, and Brian, I don't know how you feel about this, but I would find it incredibly difficult to talk to somebody about how I feel about myself. You know, I'm not even sure I would have that conversation with my wife. I mean, I probably would.
Blokes aren't very good at that kind of stuff.
No, that's my point.
Generally.
We don't open up about personal stuff on that level very well, do we?
No.
Well, the clients that I've had are that our men do.
Right.
I think if you're wanting to improve yourself, and most of us strive to be the best version of ourselves, why wouldn't you want to? Why would you not want to explore those questions and yourself? Because that gives you a greater understanding of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I do think, I think it's changing, isn't it?
Yes.
Men wanting to talk about how they feel and you know, the sort of stuff that you're talking about.
As well. Yeah. Men aren't, you know, they don't have built-in confidence. You're not born with it.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, that's interesting, actually. You're right, Richard. It is changing, I'm pleased to say, slowly but surely. I mean, at BBN, just the Maidstone group, we've got Claire Noyelle and Ali Hollands that do a lot of that kind of stuff. And you often associate that with ladies and women. But Paul Wilson from this neck of the woods, from A Happy Head, has joined us. And he's fitted in brilliantly. He loves the group and we love him. And he's doing really well there, and I've not known a guy do that kind of stuff before, so that's fairly recent. The last
few
weeks,
there are a few men that do
there
well.
Is
but
yeah.
Also I have male clients that come to me for style. I had a male client come and I did a color and style analysis with him, which I tend to work differently with each individual client, and he was in his late 30s 40s. His wife had bought
his clothes previously for him.
Mm. Oh, I see.
She
dressed him.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And he wanted to be able to dress himself.
Yes.
Of course. Yeah. Why wouldn't you? Mm. And so by the end of the session, he knew exactly what colours suited him. He knew exactly what styles suited him. Yeah. He went shopping.
Oop.
He bought...
Oops.
I can fill a domestic at the end of that.
He came home with a lot of bags and his wife said,
"You're not wearing that."
But he had the confidence to say, "Oh, yes, I am," if she did, but she didn't.
No.
And he bought some ties and some shirts, and he emailed me a couple of weeks later and said, "The comments that I'm getting, people are loving my style and the colours that I'm wearing." Mm-hmm. And that also would have helped his relationship with his wife, because he's more confident.
I can see. I mean, it must be very empowering for a lot of people who perhaps have felt they need to be a certain type of, or portray a certain type of image at work or, you know, whatever it is. I mean, the classic is, you know, people that have to wear a suit to work.
Absolutely.
Well, I was just going to say that when you said about buying shirts and ties, 20, 25 years ago, huge, but kind of who does now? Does anybody have to wear suits and ties? Well, yes,
because I think in the City of London, absolutely, it's still more common, but it's certainly a lot less common generally now, I think.
You can, it's more expression in what
within
you're wearing
that.
So, you know, linings of suits
are
very important.
Socks.
And socks and shoes.
Mm. Yes.
Before it was, you know, black. There were so many rules before, which there are not now, which is good, because we should be able to express ourselves.
I mean, professional services firms are still very much... run along those lines, aren't they? You know, your client expects you to be wearing a suit, and it may not be a tie and shirt all the time, but you know, it generally is a two-piece suit with a white shirt or a, you know, a neutral shirt. So I think there is still a lot of that.
Maybe solicitors,
accountants, accountants, you know, I don't know many who don't dress like that.
I think you're right with the jackets and the ties and the jackets and suits, but just I see very, very few people wearing ties these days.
Ties are becoming increasingly, I think, rare.
Aren't they?
Although you know they can, I think they can really complement a look,
absolutely,
and style,
or bow ties or cravats.
And they do make you stand out, don't they, if you actually do wear one, because people are tending to wear one a lot less.
Do you ever have to wear a tie, Richard?
I wouldn't say that I have to wear one.
Are there times when you feel you should?
There are times, yes. Mm. And that will be due to the nature of the client that I'm visiting, which will be along the lines you said, of a traditional service provider business, like maybe a solicitor or...
And if you didn't dress like that, you would feel uncomfortable in their presence. You would feel underdressed or inappropriately dressed.
I think inappropriate is the word. Mm. I think it's about, you know, I'm a great believer in you don't get a second chance to make a first impression.
Sure.
It's a cliche, but
it is less than five seconds.
Mm. Yeah,
actually.
Exactly. And if you walk into a customer or a prospect where you want to do business with them, you know, you don't want to create the wrong impression. And if you walk in without a tie in an environment where everybody's wearing a tie, they will immediately look at you and go, "You've got that wrong," you know, and you don't want to get it wrong.
So it is dressed to impress then, isn't it, really? And coming back to you, I think
it's dressed to fit in.
I
get a lot of clients that have either been in the corporate world or have been in as teachers or also had to wear a uniform. And they're now starting their own business.
And they need to know how to dress in the outside world.
They want to be able to express their own personality and feel comfortable to be able to talk about their new business.
Mm.
But not to fit in that sense, because they're so used to fitting in, that that's what they're used to.
They want to express themselves rather than be somebody's, the epitome of somebody else's expectation or whatever it is, I guess. Yeah. I want to come back to the confidence thing, because for me that for me is at the kind of the heart of all of this. There's so many young people, I think, out there today, and you know you mentioned it's Mental Health Awareness Week, and I think a lot of a lot of the issues that young people have today in terms of finding their place in the world comes down to confidence.
Yep, absolutely.
And that for me is the kind of the big win out of all of this in many ways.
Actually, I've just been asked to, if I could create a talk or a workshop for sixth formers for that very reason, because it is important that, and they have so many stresses on themselves now with exams and social media and all of that, that anxiety is very high, and body confidence. So I'm hoping to go into schools and talk to sixth formers and possibly younger on how they see themselves and the importance of actually understanding that they are beautiful in their own bodies and minds, and how to not be so overwhelmed by the images that they see and the way that people judge them.
Because that's always existed, hasn't it? I mean, we've always had supermodels.
Yes.
You know, we've always had Twiggy, and then we've had your, you know, Heidi Klums and your...
Kate Moss.
Claudia Schiffer. Mm. And, you know, we've always had these kind of people, but they've always been in those kind of glossy magazines, Cosmo and Marie Claire and all that, and they've always been a little bit, but with social media today, absolutely, it's in everybody's faces 24/7,
and filters
it? Yeah,
and you know, they, every, you take a picture and you filter it, you can make yourself look slimmer, you can make yourself look younger, you can make yourself look a different
colour.
That
doesn't happen, really, does it? Good Lord.
Well, I've seen a few with yours.
Have you really?
And there's all the kind of the trolling that goes on around all of that as well. So it's, you know, small wonder then that there are an awful lot of insecure young adults out there who are kind of struggling on that level.
Yeah, well, I'll be working with them to help them move forward and understand that they don't have to listen to that, and they are beautiful in their own bodies, and we need to be accepting of ourselves and others as well. That's really important, is that we don't do that. We don't fat shame people or thin shame people.
Yeah.
You know, we need to be much more tolerant.
Yes.
Of different shapes and sizes.
Absolutely. Mm.
Sitting in the studio with me and you, little bro.
Well,
so that's good.
We've never had a problem with it, because we just sit on them, don't we, if that happens.
But also, it's I guess it's a communication thing as well at that age, perhaps. Mm. So you can probably help them with that, because there's the age-old thing of them really now living their lives through their phones, isn't there? Mm. And we've all seen it. You've seen six of them sitting in a pub or something around a table, and they're all on their phone, and they're actually not talking to each other. So I think the art of communication is actually getting lost with those generations if we're not careful, and they're just going to forget how to have a conversation with somebody, and they can't walk up to somebody in the supermarket and chat to them, or at a bus stop, or how we used to do everything.
You're absolutely right, and the number of times, I mean, I meet, you know, people when I play golf and I play in matches, and we get talking about, you know, who they are and what they do, and then they talk about their family life, and, you know, they've got a 21-year-old who's, you know, really struggling, and, you know, they can't find a job, and, you know, the danger is that we're gonna lose a whole generation of young people who are gonna just drift through their 20s. They'll be 30, having never had a full-time job, never really had any kind of life experience whatsoever. Because people haven't taken the time to have this conversation with them. So I think what you're doing, you know, at that early age is really important. So
yeah, I think I do think that children do communicate. I think we tend to think that they don't communicate because they're on their phones, but I still think that's a form of communication, and it's still an art that we all use. Fluttering around.
Oh, really? That's one of our famous fruit flies that we've got flying around in the studio. Yes. Yeah, so,
does he live here? Does he?
Absolutely. So, give me an example of kind of someone that you've helped in the business world, though, in a kind of business context. Give me your best testimonial as a kind of example of the power of what you do.
So, personal branding.
Mm.
So, personal image. I have worked with a few people,
understanding. So I would start with a mini colour and style analysis, and then we would go through wardrobe, and we would see, I would show them what suits them, what doesn't suit them, why they buy their clothes. Mm-hmm. Because some people buy their clothes because they see it on somebody else. They think it's going to suit them.
Assuming it's going to look the same.
It doesn't, nine times out of ten. And they have things in their wardrobe that they would never wear, have labels left on because they've bought the wrong thing, or they think they buy it for a certain occasion, particularly business wear, and then they realise that it might not go with something else. So I show them how to mix and match everything and how to dress for the person. It's all about, for me, that's my philosophy, it's all about the person.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about the style, as in fashion.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Style is your essence of who you are.
You're not trying to be Beckham or Victoria Beckham.
No, it's not about fashion. Mm. It's about, I mean, if you want to follow fashion, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you can follow it with your own inimitable style. Yes. So that's what I would always say.
Nobody wants to be unfashionable, though, do they? I mean, I know...
It will come back into fashion at some point.
Brian is partial to a pair of flares that he puts on. Oh,
really? There's not that much room in any of my trousers, let me tell you.
Is that called trendsetting?
And yes, absolutely. No, he's having a game with you there, Amanda.
Well, so it's fascinating, but we need to move it on because it's 5 to 4 already.
It is, but yeah, we'll have a half time break, slightly past half time, and then we'll dedicate the rest of the show to Richard, which means we haven't got to talk. So listeners will love that. Oh, but
I'm scared now.
Yes, as we build him up,
we need to find out how people can get in touch with you, Amanda. That's the key thing.
Okay. So I actually have a style clinic that runs. It's on the 21st of May. You can get in touch with me either through my website, which is amandaoreilly.co.uk, or email me on amanda@amandaoreilly.co.uk.
So how does that work? Is that a free to attend clinic?
The style clinic is free to attend.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And it's in the evening, it's a couple of hours, and it's just coming along with your style challenges.
And where are you doing that?
That one is at Junction 7, the next in a building. It's in Costa.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
In Maidstone?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, the Costa Coffee in the next
In the big
shop.
Next
Yes.
Shop.
Oh, I know it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah. Not far from Kim's Hospital and the Garden Centre and all that. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you're doing it live
there on that day.
Can just turn up on the night and good.
Buy
all right.
Coffee.
Wearing whatever you like.
Superb. Great. Thank you very much for that. That was very enlightening. Brian and I will do our utmost to be more
stylish.
And stylish is the word I was looking for.
Yeah, it's a bit of a challenge.
Moving forward.
Amanda performs all day, performing the impossible. Miracles take 2 days.
But what we're going to do for now is we're just going to have a little break. We're going to play some tunage, which I think is going to lead nicely into our next guest. And we will have a comfort break in the meantime. And we will see you on the other side.
Marvellous.
Kent Biz Connect. Tweet us live at Kent_Biz.
I got it!
Well, what is it? A penny?
A nickel? Will you hold your horses and let me get the dirt off?
A dime! We're in the money! We're in the money!
Spend it.
Yes.
Live at Kent_biz. Well, welcome back, and hopefully for the attentive listeners out there, you will have made the link with We're in the Money from the cast of 42nd Street. Not that we may have a slightly younger audience today who are wondering what on earth I'm talking about, but for those of us of a certain vintage, we know that song particularly well. And we would like to welcome Richard Dickety to the studio. Richard.
Hello.
Thank you very much for coming in today.
Delighted to be here.
Now, your company is it Secure Payment Solutions? Is that correct?
That's right, yeah.
So I'm assuming that you deal with all things payment related in terms of taking payment from customers.
Yeah, as long as they're payments using a credit or a debit card.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So predominantly, are we talking about, I mean, we started the show with a kind of discussion around retail and the outlet centre in MacArthur Glen. Are we talking about small businesses predominantly that have a need to take payments in their outlets? Or
I'd say that part of the marketplace is well catered for by companies like iZettle and SumUp and Square. There you go, I'm mentioning my competition straight off. That's good, isn't it? But no, I aim to help businesses that are probably taking in excess of £5,000 every month. No, that's not to say that that wouldn't be a small business. Yes, that would definitely include a small cafe. But the thing is, there is a cost associated with a service cost associated with the service that I provide.
Right.
And that means that you need to be doing a certain volume before you can effectively get your money back to cover those costs, because the cost of our transactions are significantly lower than the ones I just mentioned. You know, they will typically charge, you know, in excess of 1.5% to do a transaction. I mean, if you're looking at PayPal, they charge over 3%, and mm-hmm. I still don't know how they get away with that, but they do. So whereas I can come down significantly below 1%,
right,
to process a transaction.
But based on volume.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I really try and quote according to what I think the market dictates, mm-hmm. to what I think is fair, but also obviously dependent on what I need to earn in terms of margin.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I buy at a certain rate. The market is competitive, although it's very surprising that I've noticed recently. I mean, I would say that one of our biggest competitors is Worldpay,
mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that they are actually putting their rates up at the moment, which I find very, very surprising.
Mm-hmm.
But
they seem to be going through a constant cycle of being bought and sold at the moment.
Exactly,
they've just been sold again, Worldpay.
Yeah, they have. Yeah, no, that's right. And I think a lot of the rate increases that happened in the lead up to that was about them inflating their value as a business. But then I've just seen, like I say, somebody's just sent me an email saying that their rates are being put up quite significantly. You know, like I'm talking 30-40%.
Right. So this can obviously, what we're talking about here, this payment commission,
mm-hmm.
Can actually be quite significant if you're doing a lot of volume. And it might just be one item, but it could be lots of items.
I've got a couple of really good examples. You know, I mean, so I went in last Thursday to see a dentist, and he's been using iZettle, and it was great for him at the beginning because he wasn't sure, you know, how many payments he was going to take on a card, and the fact that there was no service charge really worked for him. But he's now got to the point where he's regularly taking £15,000 every month.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're paying 1.5% to process £15,000 worth of payments, and I can cut that in half, in fact over half, it's saving him an astronomical amount of money. Yes, but you're right, it is about the value and the volume of payments that you do.
Yes, okay. And I mean, I have on my website I have an e-commerce payment gateway.
Yep.
We happen to use Stripe because yep. Stripe makes sense for us as a business. And yep. actually, you know, against the likes of Worldpay, Stripe are actually very competitive in the marketplace. So presumably we're talking about you have the facility to put terminals into
yep.
Into customers or, you know, dentists or shops or yep. whatever it is, actual payment terminals.
Yep.
But also, increasingly, I guess, e-commerce is also a favoured platform for a lot of businesses as well, because you don't need to have a physical terminal. You could do it on a computer, presumably, couldn't you?
Absolutely. And we do all of that. Yes, we do the traditional face-to-face card terminals, PDQ machines, whatever you want to call them. But yes, we also provide a gateway.
Mm-hmm.
You use the right terminology there. Also, we can help people to take a payment over the phone. In fact, I did a proposal for that this morning. I did mm-hmm. another one last week. And basically, as long as you have a web browser,
mm-hmm.
You go in, you log yourself in, and at that point, while you're talking to somebody on the phone, you take their card details, mm-hmm. you punch it in, mm-hmm. and the payment is processed immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you mentioned Stripe there. Mm. It's quite interesting what you say there. I'd be surprised if they were particularly competitive, to be quite honest. Mm. I would imagine that they're charging you maybe a little bit below 2%, but I'd be surprised if it was anything less than 1.5%. Mm. Whereas we always charge what you would normally associate with face-to-face transaction rates, which would be significantly lower than that. Where Stripe have really worked is they worked out that PayPal were charging just astronomical rates, you know, over 3% plus 30p a transaction is not untypical. Stripe came in and came at a kind of a midpoint around the sort of 1.5-2% mark, but made their platform really easy to use for developers, yes. and that was who they targeted.
That was the key thing for us, I think, really, yeah. that, you know, we could create a bespoke interface
yeah.
based on how we wanted the user experience to be,
yes,
as opposed to you know, perhaps a Worldpay off the shelf kind of solution that,
yeah.
that kind of bolts onto your website and looks like it's been bolted onto your website.
Yes, mm-hmm. yeah, but that's about, in many ways, it's about working with the e-commerce developer to make the interface look what you want it to be. There's two routes you can go down. You can either use what's known as an API, and really then it is completely up to the developer to develop the front end and just integrate at the back end. Obviously, that has implications for things like PCI DSS, but if you want to go down that route, then it is, you know, wholly customizable. But if you want to go down a much simpler route, you would use something that's like a hosted form,
mm-hmm.
which you can still make fairly bespoke, but there is more likelihood that the customer may notice that you're actually being passed away from the website and you're actually going to a third-party site.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't need to look like that. Mm. It shouldn't look like that. But some eagle eyes, you know, millennials might notice that. Because obviously they're much yes. more au fait with, you know, technology and how it works, and they might notice it, and it might affect their, you know, their perception of the experience.
Yeah,
but it doesn't need to.
So tell us about Secure Payment Solutions then. Who actually are you?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. It's a very good question. I mean, my business is a limited company. Secure Payment Solutions is what I trade as. The limited company is Carefree Consultancy. But I'm a reseller.
Right.
So I am a reseller for a company called NetPay.
Mm-hmm.
NetPay are actually very similar in age to my business, but they were incorporated about a year before me. It was started up by a very successful young man, a chap called Carl Churchill, who came from a telecoms background. To cut a very long story short, he's still only early 30s. He started up a very successful business called Murfix a long time ago, which got acquired by Daisy. He then got Golden Handcuffed. But when he came out of Daisy, came out with, you know, quite a significant chunk of money, and he decided to invest it in basically innovating and shaking up the payments market. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of innovators in that space now because there needs to be. Because the you know, the acquirers, you know, who are the people who actually process transactions, have been making excessive margin for a long time.
Mm.
You know, it's a bit like when we all woke up to the fact that Tesco's and Sainsbury's have been ripping us off, you know, when Aldi and Lidl came onto the market. That's what's happening now into the payment space. And Carl is doing that by using innovative technology, basically to make a very compelling proposition to the customer, but also been enabling somebody like me to actually do it. It just wouldn't have been possible before NetPay came along. You know, I'm a career salesperson, but this platform that he's developed, which is called Revolution, means that I can board a company. You know, I put an order on the system this morning, the dentist that I mentioned, and it took me 45 minutes. All I needed was a copy of the customer's driving license and a bank statement. And I went onto Revolution and I put in their registered numbers. It went and found all of the information from Company's House about who the shareholders were, downloaded all the information onto the thing. I attach the relevant compliance documentation to the order. It then goes to NetPay. NetPay check it, goes, yes, it's all fine. And we will now submit it to the acquirer. And once it goes to the acquirer, who we use to, we use First Data or Global Payments, then it gets checked by the compliance company and by the compliance department, and it's approved, yay or nay.
And if there's no hardware involved in terms of a terminal, presumably they can just access it through the cloud. They can access through a portal or something to process payments.
Well, if they're doing a telephone payment or an e-commerce payment, yes. But in that instance, the dentist obviously wants a physical terminal. So the first thing that happens is basically they have to be approved for a merchant account. But as I say, that can happen so quickly using Revolution.
And see, these are two brand names that I'm not familiar with, Brian. NetPay and Revolution.
No, I'm not.
Is it fair to say that you're sort of a little bit under the radar at the moment in that space because you're a new company?
I think that's fair to say. I do think that's fair to say. And certainly Secure Payment Solutions, you know, I'm in the same boat. But NetPay is definitely their awareness is growing, I think, in the marketplace. And I think that you will have, they will be a lot more well known very quickly, because they are, as I say, in terms of how they're innovating to make, the first thing is how easy it is to board a customer nowadays. Whereas before, there would have been swathes of documents to fill out. Now, you can typically get a decision for a customer once you've got the relevant compliance information to put the order on, typically within 24 hours.
So that means changing from one provider to yourselves is quite an easy process then, for example.
It's an unbelievably simple process compared to what it was. When I first started doing this 5 years ago, we used to deal with Streamline then, that became Worldpay, and I used to go in with a thing about, okay, this is not very good on radio, but a document that was basically three sides, three carbon copies, and I had to fill it all out. I had to put it in an envelope, send it to NetPay. They would take a look at it and go, that's wrong. And it would then have to get sent back to me, and I would have to go back to the customer and do it again. But now it's all done electronically via this platform, Revolution. And that's a major benefit.
So if I was to draw a sort of comparison with utilities providers, for example, I mean, I don't know what you're like, Brian and Amanda, but, you know, when it comes to kind of changing utilities providers because one company says they're cheaper than another or whatever, and then you've got this whole government kind of website U-switch that's been set up, and to be honest with you, it just kind of goes straight over my head and I don't really give it a second thought. I'm just kind of, I get a quarterly bill, okay, I might be paying slightly more than I should be, but am I that bothered about it? And there's a kind of, for me personally, on that level with utilities, there's an apathy. But actually, on a kind of business level, it's a bit more serious, isn't it?
Well, generally, I'm the same, to be honest, because I think a lot of it's a false economy. You can spend hours, days, weeks trying to change to somebody, which you do, but they just happen to be cheapest at that time. So probably 3 months later, somebody else will be cheaper, and it just, what goes around comes around. So I've just found through experience, I'm better off sticking where I am and it leaving itself out.
I think it's quite difficult. It's quite different in the merchant services space. We tend to be competitive in most instances, I would say, but competitive over a longer period. As I say, Worldpay are actually in the habit, for whatever reason, of putting rates up. My wholesale rates have not changed in the 6 years that I've been doing this. And as a result, I haven't had to put anybody's rates up, and I don't feel the need to. I would not want to. So,
but I wonder if you do you come across this kind of apathy that I've just been talking about in your industry as well, or are business owners generally more kind of receptive and more kind of open to having a discussion about how much commission they're paying their payment gateway? Or
yeah, no, you, I must admit, in the e-commerce space, it seems to be harder because I think that you know, I mean, you've kind of intimated, you know, the whole process you have to go through to integrate a gateway.
Yeah.
It's not simple and straightforward. So a lot of people look at it and they go, "Do you know what? It ain't broke."
And an awful lot of web design companies out there won't even go near e-commerce. So having kind of got over that hurdle and then kind of got one set up, the thought of kind of potentially changing it and throwing another spanner in the works is quite frightening, I guess, for a lot of people.
And that is true. But I think that really what you've got to go for, what we need to be going for, and what NetPay are trying to do is to make, the documentation simple, to make it easy for e-commerce developers, and then build functionality into the API to enable you to do something that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll be honest with you, I can't give you a particularly great example of that. But I mean,
create a bespoke experience for your customers.
I mean, one thing that I do think is quite clever that that NetPay have is a product called Link to Pay. So potentially it means that you could go onto somebody's website and go, yes, you can pay now, but equally, you can pay later. And how they do that is if you click on that link, you would then get a text message or an email containing a payment link, meaning that you can pay at your own convenience. Now, some people might get very nervous about that, and they think, oh, well, that means that people aren't going to pay. I see it as giving the consumer control back, because at the end of the day, if I'm not in a position right now to get my wallet out, but I've got so far down the, you know, the purchasing process on a website, and I go, do you know what? If I've got a link sitting in my SMS inbox and I can do it when I'm sat on the couch tonight, yes, I'm going to do that.
That makes sense. How would they control that then if 2 weeks later they haven't paid for it?
The retailer sets how long the link is valid for, so they could set it to be only live for 24 hours, 48 hours, a week.
So in other words, you could it could expire before you ship it, sort of thing, if they still haven't paid.
The order would not get completed until the order would get paid, and at that point, this is what you know, referring to talking about the API, at that point the API would tell the website, no, that order has now been paid, you can ship it out now.
Because what's worrying me now with Amazon and, you know, the likes of Amazon is, I mean, I bought these Hawaiian Lays at the weekend. I mean, which was great, you know, found what I wanted, brilliant. I mean, that's what Amazon are so good at. They just make it easy. But I hadn't realised that I'd authorised the payment when I'd clicked on, you know, complete order. And by that, I mean, they actually took the credit card I already had on the system and they just processed it. Without me actually going through that final process okay, yes, I want it off that card. They just took the default card that's kind of stored on the system and they took the payment.
I think it gives you an option.
I think they call that one-click ordering.
Right.
Yes,
it is.
At some point, you must have
activated.
I mean, I'll be honest, I use it all the time and I love it because the whole convenience of it is just ridiculous.
Oh, I agree. But it did take me aback slightly in that, you know, I was expecting there to be another process.
Another load of screens to go through.
Because what I then had to do was go back and check the order was actually going to my right address, you know, and was actually on a valid credit card and. So I had to retrospectively do all that work that I would have expected to have done up front. So it is moving very quickly, isn't it? That whole kind of that whole world.
Yeah, you can choose to memorize it, I think, and also if it's run out or about to run out, it will flag that up to you as well. It will say you need to change your card details or something. But yeah, it's something that you can choose or not.
Buyer beware, caveat emptor, and all that.
Indeed.
Yeah,
Richard, you touched on there about all that paperwork and stuff to actually move over from another provider. Does that still apply if it's somebody that's brand new in, perhaps a new business, or somebody that hasn't got a facility to take card payments
Absolutely.
Is that quite easy now to set that up?
The process is exactly the same. The process is exactly the same. If really, the amount of time that you have been in business for or trading for doesn't seem to impact greatly, as long as, because what will always happen, certainly with a limited company, obviously with a sole trader, there will be a credit check associated with the individual. With a limited company, there will be a credit check associated with the director mm-hmm. or the main shareholders. As long as their credit history is sound, and this is the whole point with the electronic process of, you know, going through compliance, that can be found out very, very quickly, basically by going asking Experian. I got another networking business through very, very quickly. I was expecting it to cause problems because business networking is one of those things where it could be perceived to be risky because people could cancel. And also the limited company that was associated with it hadn't actually been in existence that long,
mm-hmm.
but it sailed through.
All right.
Absolutely sailed through.
I just want to ask you about your dentist example, because, mm-hmm. You know, getting an appointment with a dentist, I would imagine, is quite a difficult thing to do. You know, not just for your teeth, but actually to have a conversation about how much they're paying commission on a, you know, on a terminal, for example, where they're processing payments. So, how does it work with you? How do you encourage people to spend the time to sit down with you to kind of see the light, as it were? What's the sales process here?
Yeah, no, I mean that's the $60 million question, isn't it? You know, I'm basically in the business of cultivating as many warm to hot leads as I humanly can. The thing that tends to work best for me is face-to-face networking. And that was how I got that lead.
Right.
And that's the beauty of it. Once you get past that lead, because somebody's been in front of them and gone and been given iZettle, which took him back a bit because I think he didn't think it looked very professional. And because I had already kind of given him the tools to say to the dentist, do you know that you're probably paying quite a lot of money to do it in that way? It got his interest. It piqued his interest. I then phoned him up. I phoned him up and said, I can do what I do, basically. And he came back to me and said, yeah, but I don't pay anything for, if I don't use it. And I said, yeah, but how much do you use it? And he said, well, typically, you know, £10,000 to £15,000 a month. Mm. At which point, I'll be honest, my eyes lit up.
Yeah, it's quite a lot of money.
Yeah, my eyes lit up because I know my competition, so I knew what he would be paying. Mm. And when I told him, you know, what he would be paying and what he would be paying with mine, for him, it was a complete no-brainer.
Yes.
And at that point, you know that I'm 90% certain I'm going to drive in there and I'm going to get a deal. And I wasn't wrong.
But so it sounds to me like you position yourselves very much on price and kind of being competitive on that level.
But that is the reality in a lot of times. But that's why my recent marketing materials are very much geared towards four specific sectors. When you're talking about taking a payment over the phone, there's very little, there's no other way really to differentiate yourself. But there are markets like the hospitality sector where, yes, there's a lot you can do to differentiate yourself on service and other stuff that you can do for them. Like in the hospitality sector, I like it because you can integrate a card payment machine into a till system, which then integrates with Xero, which helps making tax digital, which integrates with a loyalty program, which means that you can encourage customers to come back. And sitting behind that is a merchant ID, which I provide.
Right.
But if you're helping them to do all the other stuff to make sure customers keep coming in and they keep coming back and you're making their life easier by doing, you know, they're doing their tax returns really easily, you get a very, it's a very value-added sale.
Okay. So it's not always all about price then. It depends on what your business is.
Yes.
And the additional value that you can add.
And the other one that I would like to mention that is very, very significant is the ability to get money in the bank next day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is not common.
No.
Certainly
not with Stripe. I mean, they make me wait probably up to 5 days, something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, with both the acquirers that I use, depending on the the category that you're in, i.e. healthcare or, you know, hospitality, whatever, there are some sectors that they deem to be lower risk, and therefore they will consider putting the money in the bank next day as long as you go through an approval process.
So they don't wait for it to clear, per se, that you can have the money immediately, which is a great thing for cash flow, isn't it?
Massive. It's absolutely huge. And the one sector where it is particularly important is car dealerships, because you know they could clear their stock on a Saturday. Well, they need to be out on Monday morning at auction buying another load of stock.
Yes.
So yeah, it's huge. Well, it's huge for every sector, because at the end of the day, if somebody's holding on to your money for 4 days, that's 4 days where you could have been doing something useful with that money.
A real impact on cash flow, isn't it?
Interesting, isn't it? Yeah. So presumably you're kind of trying to build up a referral network with firms of accountants and people like that.
I would love
credit
to do
management
that.
Businesses.
Yeah, those are the obvious ones, and e-commerce providers. But the reality is that hasn't been hugely successful for me. I did sort of think about pursuing it as a strategy, but for whatever reason, as you've already pointed out, Stripe really seems to have resonated well with e-commerce providers.
Well, I'm thinking of people like Tracy Westall, who, you know, if you'd been at Maidstone on Friday, you'd have been able to have a chat with her. I mean, her business is Pecunia.
I'll make sure I'm there.
You know, they're credit management specialists. But she'll be at Business Vision Live on Wednesday. You could have a chat with her. For people like her, I think, to be able to kind of divert or to kind of signpost businesses to people like you, I think could be, from that point of view, from a cash flow management point of view, could be quite a valuable kind
which
of service.
Which is totally her bag. Yeah, so she's got firsthand what's happening to right.
We need to draw things to a close, believe it or not. We're nearly kind of out of time. So,
well, thanks both of you for the opportunity.
Well, thank you for coming. It's certainly
opened
my eyes.
Very welcome, Richard.
How do people get in touch with you, Richard? That's the key thing. How can people kind of say, Richard, come in and give me a quote?
Because the easiest way is by telephone. So 0333 222 7700, and that will be answered from 8 a.m. till 9 p.m. Monday to Saturday. And if it's outside of those hours, people can leave a voicemail. And believe you me, I will get back to them.
Do have a Twitter account as well, I know.
Yeah, I have a Twitter account. I have a Facebook account. Have an Instagram account. And I'm sure there's another one that I've forgotten.
Look at you, all over social media.
Yeah. Or you could come to one of Brian's business networking meetings and hook up with you there as well. But go on, give us a quick...
Yeah, and it's at SecPaySols. So SecPaySols. SOLS at SecPaySols. And
brilliant.
Of course, you can email me, richard@secure-payment-solutions.co.uk. Doesn't that one trip off
a lot
the tongue?
Of hyphens there?
That trips off the tongue. And yeah, I think that's probably enough
good.
Ways to get hold of me.
We are totally out of time. The show is going to cut off. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back here
Monday. Actually, next week. Yeah.
At 3 o'clock. So until then, thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.
Our lips shouldn't touch.